Hi, today's August 6, 2016, and this is Mobile Movie Podcast number 169. My buddy John Westfall is on super secret assignment somewhere and is unable to join us from his secret lair or wherever he is. But in his place, we have our buddy Don Sorcinelli. Ooh, I think I got his name right this time.
You did. We're on a roll here.
I think I'm two in a row now. And, you know, we want to acknowledge the Olympics since they just fired up. I think their ceremonies were on Friday night on the 5th. And I haven't seen anything, but Don, you were watching. So how's it been?
It's been interesting. You know, I was pretty amazed. This morning, my youngest son was playing in a charity 4-on-4 soccer tournament. And I actually made a point that my phone had a good solid charge before I went off to these games because, amazingly, you know, everything's available online and easily, you know, and optimized for mobile access right now. And it's you know, it's just so amazing from a technology perspective how far we've come and just, you know, if we use Olympics as our milestones and our benchmarks, the last two Summer Olympics in the last 8 years, it's now you can just watch anything, anytime, anywhere, you know, when it comes to the Olympics.
And yeah, which app were you using today?
I was using the NBC Sports app,
okay.
Which, you know, NBC for everybody in the U.S. is the provider, replete with more commercials than anybody could possibly ever want.
And is it the same commercial over and over again, or are the different commercials?
Well, I'll tell you, the opening ceremonies were at least 5 minutes of opening ceremonies followed by 2 to 3 minutes of commercial break. It actually, if you scour the internet today, the universal railing against NBC for how they handled it is amazing. People were just so upset over how much commercial time was spent during it. But no, it was, you know, I will say, though, it's the NBC Sports app gives you complete access to, it's not just what the TV networks, and obviously NBC, you know, with Comcast and NBC Universal, they own so many stations that they spread this out across. But even the things that aren't on at any given point, if it's an event that they're recording, they're actually making it available for live streaming.
And
the quality is fantastic.
Yeah, because those of us who enjoy some of the niche sports, you know, they may not ever make it onto live TV.
Yeah,
you know, the swimming, and those guys always make it, but there are, you know, air rifle and things like that might not make
yep.
it.
Yep, there was a lot of fencing today. You know, if people that wanted to watch fencing, there were apparently a ton of upsets too. As somebody who has watched maybe a grand total of 10 minutes of fencing in his entire life, the fact that I know that there were multiple upsets tells you that I'm far too saturated with Olympic information at this point.
Well, this is the wrong Olympics for me, but I wanted to notice in the Winter Olympics, I'm a fan of curling, and I know this is odd coming from a guy in Hawaii, but I am a fan of curling. I've been a fan since I lived in Alaska. I don't know all the rules and all that, but I just enjoy watching it. So, you know, and that's never on live sports, right? I mean, it's never making it on the main Olympic television shows during the Winter Olympics.
I only know curling. I believe curling is the sport that Canadians participate in if they're not good enough to make hockey.
Oh, my goodness. We're going to get hate mail.
I always tease. I kid you, Canadians. I love hockey. I'm a huge hockey fan. Anybody who knows me knows that. And so I always tease about that. I tie almost anything Canadian into hockey or, because we live so close to Quebec, poutine, which is the French fries smothered in cheese and gravy.
Yeah.
Yep,
you know, I've never had it, but somebody in Honolulu apparently serves it, so I got to go find this restaurant and try it.
If there's pineapple on it, I'll be very upset. I'll just let you know, that totally takes away from what I expect it to be. But no, I love the Winter Olympics too, and I'll be interested to, you know, as I said, by two years from now will be the next Winter Olympics.
Right.
In 2 years, it'll be amazing to see what kind of coverage. I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see more either VR-based, 360-based, or
360,
augmented,
yeah.
Or even augmented where you're watching and you're getting statistics. And,
yeah.
Who knows what 2 years is going to be like for us? From
HoloLens based, so we can walk around the venue and, you know, or the and take a look at it. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's I like I said, after what I'm seeing this year with access to the actual coverage as well as access to statistics, real time information. Who knows what 2 years from now is going to hold for us when it comes to you know, not never mind. I mean, obviously, Olympics is the grandest of grand stages, you know, but just when it comes to sports now, when you look at what we have access to, the amount that professional sports teams are spending on in-stadium experience using your mobile device so that you're getting statistics, replays. It's just amazing to me, and again, it just speaks to how fast things are accelerating as far as it all goes.
Right, and I guess unlike the other major sporting events, we only see the Summer Olympics, Winter Olympics every 4 years. So the technology jumps are much more evident than on the annual stuff that, you know, the real football, as the rest of the world calls it, or we call soccer. American football and baseball, it's every year, right? So we really don't see the jumps in technological enhancements there, if any.
It really is events like this, the quadrennial type of events does give you the ability to pause and reflect, like you said, as a 4 year to say how far we've come in certain ways.
Right.
I mean, obviously we look at how far the athletes come, the way they at sometimes the way records get shattered.
Right.
But how we
the non-enhanced athletes.
Let's leave the Russian team out of this discussion at this point. Obviously, the IOC has left the Russians out at this point, so we should do the same. It's amazing to me that, again, the way we consume this, never mind having instant live access, but being able to go back and watch the recordings of events and replay, and just the easy access to all of this. And again, from wherever, it doesn't have to be that I'm tethered to a PC anymore. It's I can just open up my phone or my tablet, and as long as I have access to the internet, I can see this stuff.
Yeah. And you know, for those of us of a certain age, and I'm older than you, Don, and for those of us in Hawaii especially, you know, until not that long ago, we did not get live sports feeds. So all of our sporting events, the Olympics, football, baseball, it was always a day late. So watching the game, you know, unless the local sportscasters used to have a close your eyes segment on the newscast saying, if you don't want to know what the score is, you want to watch the game tomorrow, close your eyes now. I'll let you know when you open your eyes. I won't say what the scores are.
So. Yeah. Don't you love those? I always remember the, they still do that actually. The other networks, I find at least here in the greater Boston area, the local networks will say, because we'll have our athletes that are from, you know, especially with the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
But even with the summer, we've got a lot of them this year that are competing out of New Hampshire, for example. And they'll say, let's tell you how our New Hampshire athletes did today. But if you don't want to know, turn down the sound and leave the room. It's like, I just picture people closing their eyes and going, la, 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 really loud for about a minute all throughout New Hampshire. that moment in time. But like you said, it's just the access to the information is amazing. And I can only imagine after a couple of days of this Olympics, I can only imagine what it's going to be like in 2 years for the Winter Olympics. Yeah. I can, the way things are going, like I said, augmented reality, virtual reality, 360, I could see a lot more 360 degree views of things. Like when they show you, I could see it, somebody doing the downhill for you, running the downhill course. They've done that in the past with GoPro, like in past Winter Olympics. Now they do it in a 360 immersive.
That would be crazy.
So you could actually feel, you know, and have this immersive kind of experience. There's a lot of potential. And who knows what's going to happen in the next 2 years to make that happen.
You know, and speaking of how technology has progressed, before we started recording this podcast, you're talking about Sling Media and one of its co-founders passing. So I was wondering if you wanted to say something about that.
Yeah, I was kind of sad too, as somebody who was a very early adopter of the Sling Box, and Blake Krikorian passed away very unexpectedly at the age of 48 this week. And there's been tons of eulogies written you can find around the internet. He was a tremendous person in the VC community. Brilliant, brilliant guy, engineer. And when we're talking about this stuff now in mobile access and streaming, you know, it's amazing how this all sort of ties in, because, you know, it was about a decade ago, actually a little over a decade ago, that place shifting with the Sling Box, you know, hooking up and providing access to my cable box, for example, no matter where I was, was pretty revolutionary and groundbreaking. And ironically, Blake and his brother, the motivating factor was they were huge. They tell a story about being huge sports fans, especially baseball, rabid. I believe they were Giants, San Francisco Giants fans. And Major League Baseball started MLB.com. They said, great. They traveled a lot on business at the time. Oh, great. I'll get an MLB.com account. And when I get this, then I can watch the Giants wherever I go.
Right.
Well, the problem was, is the first time they were, I think the story goes, they were in New York. It might have been Blake. It may have been his brother. They were in New York. They log on to MLB.com to watch a Giants game, and the Giants were playing at home. Well, MLB.com looked at their home address, their billing address, and said, oh, the Giants are at home. You can't watch this game. It's blacked out. And so they said, there's got to be a better way. And when you looked at, And people who tell the story about Blake, it's stories about Blake Krikorian and everything he invented. He was constantly doing things. It was all about making it accessible, but making it brain dead simple to use. And the Sling Box was one of the simplest things to set up. It was brain dead simple. And I started using it. I used it religiously when I traveled. And I still tell people the stories about, I remember being out, as a matter of fact, one of our Seattle MVP summits, flying back on a red eye at the end of it. It was bad weather, and we were hearing bad weather in Boston. Our flights might be canceled or delayed. And I'm sitting at the gate, and I pull out my phone, and I bring up my Sling Box, and I start watching the local Boston weather forecast to get what's going on back home. And it turned out it wasn't as bad as people were making it out to be. I'm watching this, and then all of a sudden I feel like this presence, and I look, and there's got to be 7 or 8 people standing over my shoulder, all number one watching the weather forecast, but being amazed that they were watching my local TV and they all knew it as a local TV forecast, right, on my phone, at that time a Windows mobile phone. Totally dating everything,
yeah.
But it was pretty amazing, and like I said, that was pretty groundbreaking. And when you look at what it did and what it's sort of led to, eventually after attempted court challenges against place shifting that were tried and never really succeeded, people had to start, media had to start thinking about ways of providing the content directly. They didn't want to compete, and so, where we are today, everything we just talked about with the Olympics, to a certain extent, we need to owe at least some level of gratitude to a guy who was really, you know, a man and his brother who were really ahead of their time in the Krikorians and what they did. And so it was incredibly sad to see, because I still believe that he had a lot at the kind of persona he was, that the way he, the inventiveness that he had, his original thinking. There's probably so many more things he could have brought to the world.
He was a young guy,
It's at least we have that today. Like I said, it's a testament to, you know, while sling boxes and are not as widely needed as they used to be, they definitely hold a place in history for where we got to today.
Right, and before people mock us, because I was also a Windows a very I won't say fanatic, but a very serious Windows Mobile user back then. In 2006, we were still 1 year away from the iPhone being introduced.
Yep.
We were 2 years away from Android being introduced. Netflix was DVD only. If they were around at all. I think they were DVD only at that point. this was a very different world. And Windows Mobile had about a 40% market share of smartphones.
Yeah. Palm finally waved the white flag.
Yeah.
By 2006.
Right.
Palm had waved the white flag.
That's right.
And Palm OS went by the wayside in favor of, Palm devices running Windows Mobile. BlackBerry still had its strong point, but even they were starting to see some of the, where security wasn't at the highest regard, and you didn't have the that passionate level, but even they were starting to see some of their, so a little bit of falter. It's a totally different time, and it speaks to, I've said it before and I'll say it again, that when it comes to the mobile wars, it's a 100 years war. It's constantly evolving. It's constantly changing. Who would have thought that Android would, through their strategies, have the pervasiveness and numbers? We everybody had said it's an Apple world, and it's going to be Apple, and forget everybody else. It constantly evolves. It constantly changes. The one thing you have to be willing to accept is the fact that nothing stays the same when it comes to this technology, and that's a good thing. In the end, we all win as users of the technology and consumers. Whether it's Android, whether it's Apple, whether it's Microsoft, whether it's somebody we don't even know yet. I guarantee it won't be the same 5 years from now as what it is today. That's the one thing we've been able to see. I think you and I have seen it very closely over the past 15, 20 years. It's a race that who's in first is constantly changing.
Yeah, last week my guest was another Don Watkins. And we celebrated the IBM PC's 35th anniversary, which is coming up in a few days on August 12th. And Don and I were both early IBM owners and users. And in 35, IBM doesn't make PCs anymore.
Yeah.
They sold off their server group. I think they only make mainframes from a hardware perspective these days. So it's a very, who would have thought, after that huge explosion of success with IBM PC, that they'll no longer be making PCs 35 years later. But the market is still around. It's just that they're not with it.
Yeah, the market's still there. And even that market is evolving. I still don't think everybody had written off it was the death of the PC. Then it was going to be the death of the notebook computer was going to all be tablet. And now we're seeing that the idea, what everybody had dismissed as not really being feasible in hybrids, we're starting to see somewhat of a reemergence. I still say a lot when it comes to usability and form factor is very much contingent on where the underlying hardware is, where is it 2 years from now?
Right.
Who would have thought that we would have been able to use a smartphone as a converged device, doing everything on it, listening to our music, watching our videos? Who would have thought that in 2002, 2003?
Absolutely.
It was nice conceptually, but the hardware didn't make.
Right. I could store maybe an album's worth of music on my smartphone with an external SSD card.
And the usability of it, the frame rates were slow because the processors weren't there yet and everything. It's all about, and that's why I say when you look at now the emergence of some of the hybrids, some of the latest chip technology is allowing for light enough with enough battery life to make something, and play with form factors that are more desirable.
Yeah.
And we keep on, as I still say, the major challenge that we have from a scientific perspective is battery life.
Absolutely.
If we can tackle that problem, who knows what the form factor of tomorrow is going to be? It's pretty much going to be whatever you want it to be at that point. But it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Well, if Apple and the manufacturers that emulate it would lose their fetish for thinness, we could immediately double battery life.
Oh, I know.
I know.
We went from it's desirable to it's an obsession with how thin we can make it. And you know, it sort of comes back to the same thing of we've got to make our phone smaller. Yeah. Then we make it bigger. Now we're sort of like, okay, are we going to start to make it smaller? You know, the thing of it is that, again, all of this constantly changes and evolves. And a lot of it's based on not the aesthetic, not at the surface level, but deep within what the technology can do. And, you know, how fast can it be? How battery efficient can it be? How light can it be based upon those factors? And that's what drives. So I don't write any I refuse to write any technology off anymore, because all it's going to take potentially is one underlying change to suddenly what seemed non-feasible is suddenly very feasible.
Yeah.
You never know. It may not be here today. Hey, that's great. But to say that it'll never be around, that's a little bit too dismissive the way things keep changing. Yeah.
And speaking of change and anniversaries, you know, Windows 10 anniversary update finally emerged from hiding earlier this week. Not all my machines are getting the update, and I'm too lazy to download the ISO and install it.
Yeah, my understanding is if you check online, there's some steps you can do. I believe it relates to you can do some things around like learn more or something like that to sort of force the update, the anniversary update. If you're a 10, you can go into some of the settings and learn about this, where it says learn more in the settings. If you do that, supposedly it helps push it.
Yeah.
My understanding is it's much like the initial rollout was, is that not everybody, it wasn't a deluge and all,
right.
However many millions were going to get it all at once.
Which is a good thing, by the way. It really helps network traffic, You know, like when iOS gets released, they do it all at once, and all of the U.S. all of a sudden has, you know, congestion.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, I know. It's interesting. I've been on insider builds, so I was seeing the, you know, I've obviously been working with what's led to the anniversary update.
Right. Well, you know.
It is. It's nice. I mean, I enjoy it for different reasons. My main reason why I enjoy Windows 10, especially compared to Windows 8, is that I get the best of both worlds. I do get the things I like, but both most importantly from a menuing and usability standpoint on a computer.
You know, I was going to say that two of my machines did update. My work machine is a Surface Pro 4. Finally got the update yesterday. So that was nice because, you know, that one has the inking and all that I can play with. But I haven't played with that.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is I was also in the Windows Insider build line from, but I was using, unfortunately for me, I was using a Dell Venue 8 Pro. Not that that's a bad machine. It's a perfectly good tablet. But it didn't occur to me I could have loaded the 64-bit version on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I installed the 32-bit version thinking, oh, it's an Atom. Not occurring to me, it's the new Atom, not the old one.
Let's thank Dell for their creative vision and originality in naming a new type of processor that's actually a very good processor, keeping the branding of one that was like the bane of most people's existence for several years when it came to the mobile world. Why they kept the Atom name still just completely. No, it's an Atom with the Bay Trail processor. I don't care. You started it off. You lost me at Atom. As soon as I heard Atom, what followed was that test pattern noise, that squeaking noise. You know, I had it. As a matter of fact, I was running on my HP Stream, which is a 7-inch.
Right.
I've been running the Insider builds. Woefully underpowered, that machine was a really low cost. That was a neat, I will tell you, I love using that tablet. I don't use it as much anymore just because I haven't had as much of a need to.
Right.
But that was the other thing that was amazing to me with Windows 10, at least with the tablet, was at the same time, you know, we were all talking about, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about low-cost Android tablets and everything. HP put out a $99 tablet that I could use as a regular stinking computer if I wanted to, with a Bluetooth keyboard and a Bluetooth mouse. Granted, at $99, it actually was highly functional. I use not only the modern version of apps, now UWP, as we like to refer to them, apps, but I used Outlook. It wasn't the fastest thing in the world, heaven knows, but I could actually use desktop classic, in that case, 32-bit on the HP Stream 7, 32-bit Outlook.
Yeah, for me, the bad thing about, being too stupid to think about installing the 64-bit version of my Venue 8 Pro was that the Linux Ubuntu Bash shell was only available on 64-bit.
64-bit,
and do I really want to reload and, trash my install on this? And I'm not going to do it, so I just waited. But now that I have a, Ubuntu Bash shell, it is nice.
Todd, be honest. You opened up the Bash shell, ran one or two commands, and then giggled like a little schoolboy. You were just, I can tell.
I opened the Bash shell on my machine. It's never been closed. I love having it so much. I'm an old Unix hack, so.
Yeah. Believe me, I come from that same realm for so many years, and how many years I can't tell you where I've used various tools, for years, what was it, MKS Toolkit at one time,
right.
And just to give me Unix shell, Unix utilities on a Windows box.
Right.
For certain things that I did, and by and large, for the most part, I've evolved to where I didn't need to. Well, my career has evolved to where I didn't need to as much as I used to anymore. But it's nice to have it. It's nice to be able to open it up. It's like this little warm, fuzzy place. It's like how nostalgic.
It's because it's not a virtual machine or some emulator, some wacky thing. It's tied right into the Windows system. You can LS and see the files on your hard disk, not just a virtual machine's, virtual disk. It's like I can play with the real files. I can grep it and whatever I need to do.
I was grep, set, and off.
Yeah.
There you go. I said, now all of a sudden I got a twitch. Fortunately, our listeners can't see the twitch in my eye as I use those three words. Yeah.
Well, I was just telling somebody, grepping and awking is fine, but it does get a little awkward. But the neat thing about the Ubuntu Bash shell is if you look at it, Perl and Python are installed by default. So you don't even have to go do an apt-get on it. You just, boom, you need to do something really quick. Not a huge Perl fan. I used to be a big Perl fan, more of a Python fan these days. But, wow, what a difference. I'm just really thrilled.
Well, I'll tell you, it took Microsoft, I will be honest with you, it took Microsoft years before when we got the PowerShell where I felt that there was actually a shell that gave me the power. I mean, I used for years, like you said, Bash, C shell, and I was able to write tremendously wonderful, including, some of these things go back to when we were still using a lot of dumb terminals.
Right.
I did a lot of stuff, including some awful practical jokes when you can send ASCII codes directly to somebody's terminal. You can do some nasty things to them. But I could do all these great things, and it took a while. I mean, PowerShell was the first one for me. I mean, there was VBScript and CScript were getting there.
Yeah, but they're very narrow, yeah.
Yeah, and so I was starting to,
I got excited about PowerShell when it was, I think, called Monad, which was a bad name. Mm-hmm. The problem I had it was, one, its permission levels are so restrictive. You had to set the permissions every time you ran something. And I thought it was also very verbose, in terms of how much you had to type to do the simplest things.
Yeah.
So even with the shortcuts, and I know there are shortcuts.
I will say this. It's there's inherently a certain amount of conflict with trying to create a scripting language, not a full programming language, but a scripting language, and trying to make it very secure.
Yeah.
I get that there was obviously a principal thing that they wanted to be able to tout, but you're right. One of the things you figure with scripting and why you try to get it, especially if I'm trying to convince administrators, as somebody who came from a programming realm, I work with a lot of IT admins, and I wanted to get them to learn at least some level of scripting to make their own lives easier.
Right.
But as soon as you give them something that is overly complicated to initialize or overly verbose to program, it can be an issue. And as a result, there's almost a subclassification of IT admins that are almost like IT admin programmers now. When you talk about DevOps,
right,
you've got IT admins, and then you've got IT admins who do PowerShell scripting. Because it's almost like having to, while it's incredibly powerful, it's almost too powerful in that regard. And they're programmers as much as they are anything else.
Right. And but I will say one thing really nice about PowerShell is I really appreciated the ability to work with actual objects in the Windows system. You know, like, here's a directory. You really don't need to know how to tear it apart. Just tell me what part of the directory you need.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah. That's no, there's some great. There's some fantastic things, some incredibly powerful things too, with PowerShell remoting and things like that you can do. As a matter of fact, some of the integration too, by because of the model and how they allow libraries to be added on, I've used PowerShell an awful lot in conjunction with Exchange and Office 365.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, thanks to remote PowerShell capabilities, I can actually do a lot of scripting against my own Office 365 domain if I want to. You can do some. There's some pretty interesting information you can leverage and find out about, and actually some things you could do scripting wise, automating some processes.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive. But yeah, it is. It, like I said, it's amazing how something that was the evolution of IT admin type scripting has turned into another programming language.
Too. Absolutely. Well, you know, once they got beyond batch commands in DOS window, you know it's bound to happen, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And continuing on in our Windows discussion mode, something really exciting happened for Windows Mobile users this past week. They got the Starbucks app. Hey, I mean, you know, if I were a Windows phone user, I would be super excited to have a real branded Starbucks app.
So when I saw the announcement, because I've said it before on this podcast, I honestly love the platform.
Yep.
I've worked with Windows 10 Mobile a lot. I really do like it. But the app issue is, for so many people, it's the reason why it's not my daily driver. The only thing, when I heard the announcement the Starbucks app is finally live, my brain turned to the Terry Gilliam cartoon in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where they said it was a bad winter, so they had to eat a couple of Robin's minstrels, and there was much rejoicing. And then you heard the, hey, like the really sad, yay. That's exactly what came into my mind, because to be excited, to have to get that excited about such a mundane, to the rest of the world, an app that's been around forever on iOS, it's been around forever on Android.
Yeah.
It really summarizes the main pain point for the consumer side of Windows 10 Mobile. It's those apps that we can't live without. And Starbucks, it's a subjective. There are people, believe me, who I know can't live without the Starbucks app.
Oh yeah,
legitimately.
Yeah.
I'm the same way with the Dunkin' Donuts app, which, by the way, there isn't a Windows 10 Mobile equivalent. But it just does symbolize the major pain point. And while I and many others can sit here, in theory, we can hope that what's starting to happen with the universal Windows platform, what's really happening on a development scale, where it's easy enough to develop for desktop and for mobile, and to be able to develop now, thanks to the Xamarin acquisition, to be able to develop one app that really is, with minor tweaks and modifications, can be pushed to multiple platforms.
Mm-hmm. One ring to rule them all.
Yeah, while there's still crossing fingers, while there's still that hope that eventually that helps get more of these apps out there,
right.
That's not my answer today.
Yeah, but the real app gap for Windows Phone users now is Pokemon Go.
Oh, that's, yeah. My gosh. my youngest finally had to come to this, to the Pokemon Go thing. So I have him, and he's a very active, he plays soccer. He's an active kid, so I didn't need something to get him out of the house. per se, and get him active. And now I'm just worrying about him wandering around my neighborhood and going into my neighbor's yards and my neighbor's.
Oh my gosh!
Especially since my neighbors, this is Salem, New Hampshire, and my neighborhood, there aren't a lot of Pokemon Go players. So I'm waiting for the phone call from a neighbor going, "Why is your kid wandering around in my backyard?"
Right, and remember, if you take your family on an international trip, do not let them play Pokemon. I don't know if you saw that Japanese athlete in Brazil that had the equivalent of a $5,000 roaming charge.
I did see that. It was fine. That was my first thing was I wanted to turn around and say, you know, you should have switched to T-Mobile. I understand the binge on thing is working now with
Google Fi.
Yes, yeah. Google Fi. There's the other one. Know, go
I
that
spent,
way.
I think I spent 17 days in the UK in total this year, and my total roaming charge, I think it was about $8 for both trips.
Yeah.
Combined.
Well, that's another. I mean, when you look at back, you know, things coming full circle in our discussion, when you look at what now is starting to happen, like I said, with T-Mobile getting aggressive and saying, if you're willing to take a throttled resolution on a screen, we're willing to not charge it against your data cap, you know, with binge on. That's, again, it's unbelievable.
You know, I don't know why people are so up in arms about that. It's, if something's bundled to get it for free and they're going to throttle it a little, but you can still use it, what is the problem?
Because it's only 480p. Wait a second. 5 years ago, I would have dropped down and thanked the world if I had 480p on my TV.
I was going to say on a standard analog television with interlaced, what's it come out to, like 256 or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, if it were digital. I mean, you know.
it's unbelievable that people were complaining. And I thought to my, because this is, I said, this is fantastic. I have my kids who are on a plan that doesn't, you know, we've got them on limited data. But it's one that qualifies for binge on, and I can tell my kids, you know, there's the list is so long of apps that are supported now. It's crazy. You start to say what can't they watch versus what can they watch. But it's you know, again, it comes back to, I mean, we live in an amazing time, not only because of what we're seeing, but how fast it's all coming around. It's just, it's everything's evolving at such a high rate of speed. It's just amazing to me. So, but yeah, it's, I look, you know, like I said, it's, I'm fortunately, my son tried to talk me into the Pokemon Go just to let you know, I refuse to succumb to it. If Pokemon Go involved catching zombies, maybe I would do it.
That's the next iteration.
That's it. Pokemon Zombie Go.
Yeah. Walking Dead Go. Go walking.
Yeah,
dead,
walking. Walking. Go.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Two last items, I guess. One is a short one. That's mine. I just wanted to mention this past week, Google Photos for iOS got an update, and it's a really important one for some of us because I was down to about 1.2 gigabytes free space on my 64 gigabyte iPhone. And this update to Google Photos has a storage recovery option, where you can get rid of some of the temporary files, and I got almost a gigabyte back, I think. And if you want to, you can also get rid of the thumbnails, which means you can't see them quite as fast if you're not on Wi-Fi. But you can get back even more. And you know, the reason why they store these things is because you think, well, I've already got my photos on here. Not all of them. If you only take photos of your iPhone, that's true. But if you use a regular camera and you upload to Google Photos, or you have a tablet and you take photos, you know, they've got a bunch of thumbnails you need to store that's not on, you know, a photo's not on your phone. But at any rate, I recovered about a gig, so I'm happy I can now wait for the iPhone 7 and not run out of space yet. So
I was going to say, or if you're like me that has one phone, at least one phone from every platform OS, and you're constantly using it for some stupid reason to take pictures.
Yeah.
Google Photos has been a lifesaver to me on a number of occasions for that reason.
Well, I take photos on two phones, two different tablets, and one actual camera, you know, digital camera. So I've got five sources of photos going up into Google Photos. The only person who takes more photos than me, and I've got about 90,000 photos up on Google Photos now, is my daughter, who put up 90,000 photos in the last year, I think.
Does she just walk around snapping, just like there's...
That's pretty much the way she does it. It's pretty wild.
Oh, wow.
Especially when she was doing study abroad in the UK this past semester. You know, she was just shooting photos all over the place.
Yeah.
But in any case, the last item I've got is yours, and that's mobile meeting technology. You know, I haven't really used much of that except for Skype for Business, so...
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. I was the other day, you're right. Skype for Business is one that, you know, formerly we knew it as Link. It was obviously highly pervasive in the workplace. But I found that this whole business around, you know, online meetings, and it goes far beyond, obviously, Microsoft technologies. We've got WebEx. We've got GoToMeeting and GoToWebinar, which are both Citrix products. There's actually startups and you know, smaller companies in getting into this too. Same company that does Free Conference Call does a product called Start Meeting. Well, the interesting thing is all of these products, I've been so used to being on a desktop, or if you had any mobile, it was usually only the audio aspect. All of them, their leaps and bounds moving forward with mobile technology is pretty, pretty impressive. I've had a lot of experience, for example, with GoToMeeting and GoToWebinar. And not only being able to attend, but even being able to host meetings now from a mobile device. And by mobile, I mean truly a tablet or a phone, not necessarily your notebook computer. There's really been a lot of advancement in it. It's another one of these areas, like we were just talking about, where, you know, it's how far things have come along in a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
It really has reached the point, especially when you're a meeting. The first evolution was meeting participation. Great, from my phone now I can possibly, first I was able to listen in on these things. Then I'm able to watch, albeit however limited it was. Now, then it was even as a participant, being able to participate interactively more with the software. Now they're even allowing you to be an organizer. Now, granted, you may be limited in what you can show depending on the product, mm-hmm. depending on what you want to show. But the other thing, too, is you can hand off, you can moderate very easily. And you can do it from a phone. So it really is, I've been really impressed. Even like I said, I've worked with GoToMeeting. I've worked a little bit more as a participant with WebEx. GoToMeeting and GoToWebinar, I've worked both as a moderator, as a host as well as an attendee with these. And the reliability and the quality has been fantastic. And I've even started working with, my company's been using StartMeeting. I was really impressed. I didn't even realize at first that they had clients for Windows, for iOS and Android.
Mm.
And I just found out about it. And my first thought again was, okay, what's this? Because this is a newer company, newer technology. Okay, what am I going to really get? And not only do I have hosting, I have participant capabilities, I actually have hosting capabilities too from that software.
And they're called Start Meeting.
Start Meeting. Yep, they're the same. It's the same people who do FreeConferenceCall.com.
Okay.
Yeah, which I believe it or not, in my history, I've used FreeConferenceCall in past when I was working with. Town organizations, small organizations where we needed to have a few people, they wanted to use landline phones to have a conference call. And I said, okay, well, you're going to have to pay a toll charge, but we can use free conference call and we can get the conference calling in. Start Meeting is actually a pretty good one as well. There's these services are popping up. The amazing thing to keep in mind that I remind people, while so many people are aware of GoToMeeting, GoToWebinar, WebEx, now Skype. The mobile platform capabilities of these, you really should try out. You really should give them a shot, because if that was something that was holding you back, you said, oh, I got to be on this meeting. I got to make sure I'm at my desk when I do this. Believe me, give it a try. All of these products have evolved wonderfully. For mobile devices, and you shouldn't let your PC tie you up when it comes to using the meeting technologies anymore. They really are great products.
Okay, Alrighty. Hey, I haven't used anything, like I said. Well, I've used WebEx, I guess, as a, you know, participant, not as a moderator or anything. I guess I've used GoToWebinar also as a, you know, end user, but not extensively. And, you know, for actually generating calls and stuff, I've only been using Skype for Business. So, not a lot of experience on my part. We'll have to talk again about that sometime. But we're bringing, for this podcast, we're bringing Moldy's Podcast number 169 to close. I want to thank my good friend Don Sorcinelli for filling in for John Westfall while he's on his super secret mission. And we have yet to do, well, we don't really know if we want to tell people if we've done the Conspiracy Views podcast, but someday.
If we tell them, then they're going to be out to get us.
That's right, so we can't do it. But anyway, thanks, Don. Really appreciate taking your time. I know it's late where you are, and we will talk again.
Yep, thanks, everybody. Thank you, Todd. Well, you know, always a pleasure to participate. Always enjoy it.
Thank you, Don.